Welcome to another episode of The Gateway. My name is Russ, and as always, I am joined by my co-hosts Amin and Biagio.
For this episode, The Gateway is excited to welcome singer-songwriter Adam Hood. Adam has been a solo artist, frontman, behind-the-scenes songwriter, and all-around country highwayman for more than a decade. Adam Hood has left his mark both on stage and in the writing room, carving out a southern sound that mixes equals parts country, soul, and American roots music. In 2016, Hood signed a publishing deal with Warner Chappell Nashville and Grammy Award-winning producer Dave Cobb's Low Country Sound, all while remaining adamantly focused on his own career, playing around 100 shows annually, promoting his third solo release, Welcome to the Big World, and now his newest release, Somewhere in Between. Somewhere in Between is an album that finally finds Hood telling his own story. A dedicated family man, he wrote Locomotive, a heartland anthem full of Telecaster twang and sunny swagger. After watching his young daughter develop her motor skills while playing with a set of blocks. Balancing his life as a relentless road warrior, Hood penned Highway Ballad Downturn about a life filled with lunderlust and long drives from gig to gig. As a blue-collar songwriter, Hood shines a light on everyday experiences, from family and friends to the thrill of Friday night. Partly because he stuck to his roots, the native Alabaman still lives in his Yellowhammer state and celebrates America's rural pockets with songs like Keep Me Here and Real Small Town, two songs filled with images of main streets, open landscapes, hard times, and good people.
Adam, welcome to The Gateway. Thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure, Russ. Thank you for having me, buddy.
This is a true pleasure for me. I have been a fan of yours for literally decades. I mean, I found your music when I was in high school, and I'm only a couple of years out of high school now, like, you know, by a couple of decades, but it's still good. So I am honored to be talking with you today. I always like to start these conversations at the beginning, and it comes with a very simple question. How did you get to where you are?
Oh, well, that's a long story.
Yes, sir.
I took for the Cliff Notes, if anybody knows what Cliff Notes still are, but I got started in church, basically, just like anybody else that kind of lived in and around the Southeast. I'm from Alabama, still living in Alabama. And so my earliest days, I mean, those were my earliest memories of music and really kind of the platform when I was in high school and, man, even junior high. I started playing and singing in front of my youth group, basically. And then from there, my mother got me a job. She went to high school with a guy that owned a restaurant in Opelika, where I'm from. And I played one Friday and Saturday a month. I made $150 for the weekend, and I quit the football team. And so it's been all downhill from there. And that was in the '90s, if that tells you anything.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. I do
back
feel
in
like
the 1900s.
Yes, sir. I feel like you're a long line of Alabama natives that had to pick between football and a guitar. And most of the time something great came out of either of those paths, but I think you went down the right one, you know?
Well, yeah, I'm pretty flat-footed. I was always really slow, and so I think I made a much better choice personally.
Awesome. So then after you kind of were moving forward and doing some of those beginning gigs, when did you realize that this was more of a career or something that you could do sustainably for the rest of your life instead of just doing like gigs at a local restaurant?
You know, honestly, I think it's really, it's been a lot of things, but it's been a really consistent progression of just opportunity and encouragement. You know what I mean? And I mean, you know, there's a John Hyatt song that he said, you know, he said, nobody ever said boo to me. And which is, I thought that was really an interesting way to say it. You know, like I don't feel like I've ever, you know, granted there've been plenty of people that have said that my music is, you know, this isn't really my style. This isn't what I like. And that's okay. But like, I've never really been discouraged. My parents were always encouraging to me, and you know, one show always led to another one and led to another one. And, you know, when I started selling my own merch, there was never a time when no one bought anything. At least, you know, if someone came to the table and bought a CD or a koozie or something every time. And so, you know, I just tried to say yes to everything that I thought was reasonable. And so, yeah, it just kind of became one of those things where it sort of, I feel like sometimes the job chose me, basically. You know,
yeah, godsend almost, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, completely 100% serendipitous. Absolutely.
Right. That's absolutely amazing. And I got goosebumps when you're kind of saying that, because I think so many people start out and they have that spark, they have that ability. But if one wrong person in the wrong moment says something, you know, it can send you on a completely different path. And I'm glad that that didn't happen for you.
Sure. Exactly.
When you're... Here's a broader question, and I'm not sure exactly how good of a question it is, but what is your day-to-day life like now? Because I know you're touring, you're doing shows, you're recording albums, you're doing all of that stuff, but you know, I don't see you on the road with Taylor Swift, and literally that's the only concert I've heard about in a great way for the last 2 years. So right. Are there other music, like, can you, all joking aside, can you be, you know, can you have a life, can you have a career, do you have those things without it being these superstar tours or these people that we see on The Voice and all over media?
Man, that's a good question, and I'm glad you asked, because it is most definitely very reasonable and very realistic. I mean, and the beauty in the music industry is, at the end of the day, you can kind of choose the path you want, and you know, I chose really early in my career. I mean, like really early, that I decided, you know, whether it was the adoration of mass media or large groups of fans, or the respect of my peers, I chose the respect of my peers, and that's the road less traveled, because it's not the most popular route, but you know, it's one where I lay my head on my pillow at night, and I'm a lot more grateful and thankful, and I feel like that I've been able to, which is, you know, for better or worse, I've kind of established a career for myself that demands my integrity, and which is good. You know, it's hard just because of the fact that, you know, it demands my integrity. Therefore I have to continue my integrity, and everything kind of has to be as pure form as possible. And that's not always the most popular thing. But I knew going into it that I wasn't going to do the most popular thing. And I wanted to be a writer. I've never really, that was the thing. I wanted to be more on the creative side of things. And I do. I love playing. I love entertaining people. But I guess the learning how to entertain people has taken a lot longer than learning how to do it has taken a lot longer than it has to, like, learning how to write songs. I feel like that's kind of come a lot more naturally. And, you know, you're not initially under scrutiny when you write, you know what I mean? Like, you, of course, you know, everything is kind of, you know, art is subjective, and it's, you know, you put yourself out there to people's opinion, but that kind of comes after the fact with writing, where, you know, when you're performing, that kind of happens in real time. People sort of, you know, they perceive what you do, and I like this or I don't like this while you're doing it. So, you know what I mean? If that makes sense.
It does. So then for right now, what's the majority of your time then spent? Is it writing? And is that kind of where you're going? And is that kind of a passive income on those side of things for you? Or is it like, if I'm not on the road, I'm not getting, you know, I'm not meeting my bills?
Yeah, well, the road is definitely the moneymaker, for sure.
I see. And, okay. All right. Because yeah. I would not have assumed that. So that's interesting.
Yeah, it definitely is. And, you know, it's, well, I'm sure is anyone that pays attention to music or social media knows that, you know, the this is a strange day and age to be a songwriter, just because royalty rates have changed and things like that, you know, and it's, but I don't know. It's kind of fun to be honest with you. And, you know, but
the new world that you're in, like, kind of,
yeah, just because, yeah, because you can kind of choose your own path and you, it's almost like it's completely leveled the playing field to where, like, we're all just trying to figure this out on our own. Like, we're all calling each other saying, hey, who's your distributor? Hey, who are you handling for this social media? Hey, who designed your t-shirts? You know what I mean? Like, it's everything. So
I see
it's completely leveled the playing field. And, but at the same time, you know, the live aspect of it, takes precedence right now, just because of the fact that there's so much that leads up to it, just with the promotion of it and the planning of it and you know, and who, you know, where are you going to go and how's this going to route and you know, the setup and the breakdown and the band and everything, just all the stuff that's involved with it. It's just a lot more time consuming.
Mm. And does that fall on you, or is that, again, I think people that just show up to a concert, you're like, okay, great, everything's here. Is that something that you're part of, or do you, for lack of a better term, outsource the logistics, all of those things? Like, how does that work, or are you kind of, that's part of your time, and that's something you have to plan for as well?
I stay as active as humanly possible. I mean, my wife handles the vast majority. Well, I kind of make the joke that if my wife could sing, I wouldn't have a job. You know what I mean? So,
I do believe it.
Yeah, but and I, you know, I have an agent. I have a great agent that kind of handles management stuff like that. And then you know, my band handles my bass player handles the tour management side of it, and we're pretty hand. I mean, I would say that as an artist, I'm a lot more hands-on than the average bear. However, no man is an island, and I know what I know what I can do, and I know what I'll mess up. You know what I mean? And so the things that I know, I mean, you know, if you want to book a show through me and you don't like to go through agents, then you're not going to have a very successful experience with me. I'm not very good at booking shows, but I can play them. I can get there and I can play them and we can sound great. But as far as like making sure everything's taken care of, the tiny details, there I'm not the best at. But at the same time, I feel like I'm probably pretty hands-on.
Right. And I love that. That's a good thing. I think every company, I think every organization, you need to know your skill sets and you need to put people where their talents lie, and you get a way better result. So
well, and along, you know, something else that I've kind of thought about, you know, I'm kind of at that place in my life to where I've started looking, you kind of start to look towards legacy and, you know, you get to this place where you think, okay, well, you know, look at all these things that I've learned and I'm glad to, it's great to be able to apply the things I've learned to my own life. But at the same time, you know, I know that there are plenty of artists that are on the other side of the canyon where I was. And, you know, my attitude is I try as hard as I can to just be available and just be open to things like that. And so that I can help somebody out, so that, you know, people send me messages all the time and they say, hey, you know, what kind of advice do you have? And that's a general question, but then I have, you know, songwriter buddies that are a few steps behind that ask more, in like, you know, more detailed questions. And I want to be able to answer those questions. And the only way to explain to someone how management works is to know how management works. You know, the only way to explain to someone how a publishing deal works is to have it been through two or three on your own. So, you know what I mean? That's kind of one of the reasons it's not why I've always been hands-on, but it's a challenge to me to try to remain hands-on instead of going, wow, I'm not any good at this. Instead, I want to at least try to learn, because I know it may be important to someone else, you know?
I like that understanding. And I think that that's why I connected with your music. I think you see that through and through. And I think, because for our listeners, I just reached out to you on social media, right? Like that was where it was. And it was a shot in the dark. And to be very honest, I didn't expect to get shit back. So like it was really cool. And like between us, like I was already a lifelong fan, but like that moment or being able to give that time to a fan, to someone that appreciates it, I think that solidifies a lot of things. But then on the other side, it goes that you know, you can't give absolutely everyone everything because you'd never, you know, do that in finding those balances. So as social media, as you've seen probably some of your colleagues, people that you've written with, kind of even ascend higher than you, not to be rude or anything there, Adam, but
no, like, it's not at all. I don't take it that way. Yeah.
Okay.
Not at
all. Good. Like, for example, you got a great song with Miranda Lambert out there. Like, right. Like we're talking at the top tier, you're there, you're with them. Is that, has that been something that you've seen change with almost the obsession or the infatuation with celebrity in specifically country music? Or was that always there and that's just now spread out further and there's more people kind of invested in and dedicated to it?
You know, that's a good question. I don't feel like it's always been there just because of the fact that I feel like that in conversation and things like that, that it's the association game has come up a lot more. But I don't know if it comes up a lot more because that's what's in my bio, or you know what I mean? Like it's hard to say, you know, but at the same time, you know, I mean, I know people that, you know, one association with one artist has skyrocketed their careers. And then there are just people that, you know, I mean, I used to tour with this guy named Leon Russell. And if you know who
I do, should, I do. Yeah. Yes.
Leon's a legend. And, but he's someone that, like, when I was on the road with Leon, everybody was like, well, who is Leon Russell? Well, you should, you know, this was before Google, so you couldn't Google him. but Leon had an interesting career because of that. He was an incredible songwriter and he was a producer and he was just, I mean, just a really about as eccentric a piano player as ever was. But at the same time, just not someone. And, you know, ironically, and, you know, in like 1971, the guy was he was the top selling act in that year. But also, you know, by the time I was touring with him, relatively unknown, excuse me. And so, you know, you start to realize that, you know, if the associative game is the only game you got, it may not necessarily serve you. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I mean, at the same time, I'm thankful that I have the relationships that I have. But I don't, I still want to be able to, it's a balance to sort of keep those relationships and thrive on those relationships, but still be your own person at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That's important. I think we all are dealing with that and with, you know, removing even the celebrity or the fame side of that stuff. You just kind of finding who you want to dedicate your time to is important.
Yeah.
When we're talking about that with songwriting specifically, do you have an idea for a song and know that you'd like to write that with someone, or are there kind of, for lack of a better term, sacred cows, sacred ideas that you've come up with? You're like, nah, I'm going to write that one by myself, or does it just come up fluently and you kind of go with where it comes?
Yeah, it all starts with the idea. And I, you know, that's the thing, like the idea is the spark, you know, and so you kind of, it's the nurturing of that idea that opens it up to where this song's going to go, whether this is going to go to a female, whether this is going to go to a male, whether this is going to stay mine, or whether I'm going to, you know, send this to Josh Weathers or whoever it is. You know what I mean? Like there's, you know, and I have, you know, I'm blessed to say I have a long list of people that I can go to, but typically, you know, I send songs to people based on the fact that I hit a wall. You know what I mean? Like I'll start to write something and then I'll go, I'm stuck. And that's kind of when, you know, my relationships with, you know, Brent Cobb and Jason Eady, and I mean, mainly those two, those are the kind of the guys that I go to just because of the fact that, you know, not from a style perspective at all, but really more for the fact that I've just had successful writes. I've been, you know, I've written with both of those guys separately and for a long, long time. And I know that if I hit a wall, they can help me push through it as efficiently as possible, you know. And then we take it to somebody else. But yeah, I mean, I think the idea is the idea comes before the idea of who you're going to send it to.
That's really inspiring. I think like you're doing that. I like that one. And yes, for listeners, check out Brent Cobb, do some of his work. Black Creek is always a great go-to.
The guy's got a million of them, man. He's just from outer space. I mean, he really is.
Exactly. And Adam, we're talking, so I'm kind of like, all right, yeah, you're cool, we're good, and I'm giving credit everywhere else. But truly, if you haven't listened to Adam's work, he has a discography of nothing but traditional, solid country songs that make you feel something and are committed to, and I think everyone can relate to, even though they are country, right? Like, that's where I think you transcend and you get it, and I think it comes from that background of just coming from where you were at, like from church, and working your way up. And I think any artist that kind of has that, you see it regardless of genre. So please, definitely everyone be checking out Adam's work. It's always my go-to. So I might be fanboying a little bit here, but
no, that's great. Thank you for saying that. That's really, I mean, like I said, it's encouraging, and I appreciate the encouragement.
Good. So when you're looking at your discography, when you're looking back at that, is there still, all right, it's a double question here. Is there a song that you wish people recognized more, right? Like, so one that you were like, this is it, right? Like, this is where
I got a ton of those.
And then everyone's like, really? Nothing? or like, okay, yeah, I get a thumbs up on it. So like, if there's a couple, or if there's one that you're like, okay, this was one that it sounds good, it checks the box, but I'm going to toss it on the album and it's probably not going to do anything, and maybe did the reverse and everyone's still kind of talking to you about it.
I mean, I'd say you can set your watch to that. I mean, and not just in my career, I think across the board. I mean, I think you could talk to just about any writer that you wanted to, and they would answer that question just like you said. The song that I thought was the most popular was the one that nobody heard, and the thing that I threw away was the one that everybody loves. Wow. And, you know, it is, I mean, it's across the board. However, I have tried to open my mind up to the idea of like, okay, what is it about this song that you do like, and what is it about this song that you don't like? And sometimes that's a conundrum. I mean, sometimes it's just not an answerable question. You know, I mean, a mind wants what it wants, and an ear wants to hear what it wants to hear. But you know, sometimes I can kind of analyze a few tunes and realize, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like, you know, the bullseye was a little tight on this one. You know what I mean? I could have probably gotten across the board. This song was probably a little bit long. I probably didn't have to put that pre-chorus in that one. You know what I mean? Like, and that's just, you know, that's just kind of the research and development that goes into being a songwriter.
Right. I love that term, the research and development, because I don't think with many of the arts, you know, whether it's music, painting, whatever, people think of that. Like, no, you have to spend time doing this, just like going to the gym, just like being an athlete.
Yeah.
You have to dedicate to it. And if you don't, you're not going to get the results that you're really hoping for.
Well, and it's tough because of the fact that when you know, it's like you said, with any form of art, you know, when, you know, nobody's still going in and chiseling away at the David, you know what I mean? Like it is what it is. It's the David, you know, but at the same time, you know, and music, it's a fine line with that too, you know, because you can't really, once you put it down on the record and everybody starts singing the song along with you, that's not really the time to change the second verse. You know what I mean? Like, but at the same time, it's also hard to live with a song that, you know, like this, you know, here we are, everybody's singing this song, and it's like, man, I can't stand that line in that second verse. You know what I mean? So there's a fine line between those two, and it's a, you know, I've tried to really learn how to be open-minded when it comes to that kind of stuff, to allow my songs to evolve, but at the same time, sort of be respectful to my listeners as well.
Yeah, that's incredible. Is there, because I know as someone who's in the industry and is spending a lot of time, do you try and consume other artists, other country music, other artists to know what's being done? Or do you try and shy away from it so it doesn't influence that? Then you're, oh man, I just made something that sounded exactly like that. Obviously I was listening to that album a little too much. Like, where from the appreciation, so you know where it's going with other people's vision, but also do you try and just stay away from it so there's no influence on that?
I find myself being more creative when I'm listening to music. When I find an album that I'm really into, I find myself writing more and doing more creative stuff. I mean, I keep going back to this one record. Anderson East put this record out called Maybe We Never Die a couple of years ago. And for some reason, I just got fascinated with that record. And it sort of, it kind of started changing some chord structures around for me. You know what I mean? Like I listened to a couple of songs and I thought, what is he doing there? You know? And so I would go back and try to find it. And, you know, things that I learned from that record kind of became things that I started applying, you know? And so, I try to listen to it, but I try not to force myself to, you know what I mean? Like if, you know, I mean, if I got a 12-hour drive, I'm not going to sit there and force myself to listen to something. I'm just trying to get home. And if a podcast is what gets me home, and a podcast is what gets me home, you know
yes,
what I mean?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Sometimes you just got to be where you need to be. Yeah, that's right. That's amazing.
You can learn a lot from that too. You know, I mean, it's all you know, absorbing human experience, basically.
Right. Is there anything that naturally gets you inspired? So I always look at inspiration as being something from the outside coming into you, something that you've experienced, where motivation is a lot of times internal. I need to motivate myself to do this stuff. I think you can have, in my experiences, I think you can have all the motivation in the world, but if you're not inspired, if you don't have the inspiration, you're just, you know, running on a treadmill. Is there something that you go to find inspiration, maybe when you're in a pinch or in a dry spell or something like that?
Man, that's a good way to put that. I never separated the two like that. That's pretty good, Russ.
All right, thank you. It wasn't my, you know, I have great mentors that have shared that with me as well. So
yeah, that's great.
Just passing it along.
Thank you. I can apply that very well. I'm one of those people that tries to write it down, you know, meaning like, you know, the beauty in having a phone is having a notepad in your phone. And if there's a line, I put it, I have a note that says lines 2024, lines 2023, lines 2022. And I try to fill it up. You know, I mean, my wife is really good at that as well. She will be watching TV and she'll go, well, that's a line. And I mean, just something that went right over my head, and I write it down, you know? And so, and I may or may not use it. And you know, that's the interesting thing. Like I go back and I look at the lines that I put in, and I probably use about 30% of them, but it's the spark. It's the stimulus. You know what I mean? Like that, yes, I can go in and look at a line and I don't necessarily use the line, but I can certainly, if I do it within a reasonable period of time, meaning like, you know, give it a couple of weeks, couple of months, if I go back to it reasonably quickly, I can at least put myself kind of back in that setting to where I can at least try to start painting the picture, basically. Mm-hmm. We're starting to at least kind of get the color on the canvas, you know?
Yeah. Do you set aside time to write? Like, do you treat it like a job? Hey, I write from, you know, this time to this time every day, or, you know, 5 days a week, or is it more just organic when you have time and when you can kind of fit it in?
Yeah. I mean, I would love to say I do it every day, but I don't. I mean, I try to sort of be in that mindset to where, you know, I would kind of call it keeping my antenna up, you know what I mean? Like I that see. Way I'm always absorbing, but I mean, you know, my kids are small and our day to day is pretty hectic and, you know, and you know, it's so, you know, at home, I try to be dad and husband and yes, musician, but musician that's kind of handling the business aspect of things. When we're on the road, it's kind of the same thing. You know, I'm, you know, the artist and stuff. And so it's kind of why I go to Nashville. You know, we live in Alabama, but I have an apartment in Nashville. And so at least a couple of days a month, I try to make time to just, you know, it's like a 3-hour drive. It's something that I've always done just because, you know, I had publishing deals when, you know, I've kind of been on my own for a couple of years now, but I still make a point to do it because of the fact that's hard for me to work from home. And, right. And so, you know what I mean? And so it's like going to Nashville is almost like, it's kind of like going to the office, you know? And so,
that's cool.
Yeah. And so that, I mean, that's kind of how I treat it. Like when I go up there to write, I write 2-3 times a day, the entire time that I'm there. And so I spend the evenings, I'm trying to collect the thoughts that I, you know, gathered during the day and get ready for the next day, you know? So I do designate that time. But at the same time, I'm always trying to sort of be open to grab stuff that I can use when I'm up there, because I'm only up there, you know, like I said, you know, you're talking about maybe a week or two out of a month. So it's, right. you know, it's not writing every day, where there are guys that are up there that write 7 days a week, you know, but I mean, that's just never served me well. I just don't feel like that's, you know, I mean, even at the most proficient I ever have been, I mean, honestly, to tell you the truth, probably the most proficient I ever was during COVID, you know, I mean, yes, when we were doing nothing, I got a ton of writing done then, you know, so, but, and the, you know, and the beauty is, that's the thing, you know, you think about it. And I mean, you know, you write three songs a week, 2 weeks a month for a year. You got some back catalog to yeah. pull back from, as long as the ideas are good. And that's the trick, you know, I mean, you know, man, you can, if it's a great song, you can ride a long time on a great song. And so I want all my songs to be as great as possible.
Right. So when you're kind of shifting into that, when you're setting up an album, is it just, do you go in with kind of a theme for this whole album, or is it, hey, here are the ones that I would consider great and I want to get them out there and they work together? Or like I guess I'm trying to look at the album project, kind of what right. that does different than an individual song.
Man, I've kind of tried to skin that cat every way that I can. I mean, you know, so like, all right, let's go into like my Shape of Things album that came out 2011. That was mm-hmm. basically a collection of demos during the years that I was at Carnival at Carnival Publishing. So I was there for 7 years, and that was probably 2 years into, yeah, I signed that deal in 2009. So 2011, the record came out. So you know, that was a pile of demos. So that was kind of a collection of songs that I thought was great. Okay, the record after that was Welcome to the Big World. Mm-hmm. I had kind of the same thing, like that was a hybrid record of older songs and then brand spanking new songs. Rachel Loy produced that record. So the vibe, and the producer is kind of, that's, you know, I've never really tried to produce my own records, and don't think I ever will, just because of the fact that I need and enjoy the opinion of someone else. And, you know, that's kind of the beauty in the records that I've been making recently, you know, with Bad Days Better and with these current singles that we've been putting out recently. I've done all those with Brent Cobb, and Brent is someone that I trust because he's a close enough friend to where the hard things don't hurt. You know what I mean? Like when, yes, you know what I mean? Yes, he can tell me that that's not a good song and it doesn't hurt my feelings. And then also he appreciates my music enough to be able to say, I see where you're trying to go with this. And I think you need to do this instead of that. And so I feel like that in the past, I mean, 2022 was when we put out Bad Days Better. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we're probably, let's say we're 3 years into this process. You know, after all these years of writing and performing and playing, I think we're really starting to define a sound. And so that's really been fun. And so, yeah, that's, I mean, that's kind of been the goal recently is sort of, you know, granted, you know, the idea of quote making albums is becoming a thing of the past, sadly right. enough, you know, and so, which I say sadly enough, I mean, I've kind of enjoyed the singles just because of the fact that, you know, when you put out a 10 song album, you have five singles that lead up to it. And then on release day, a song comes out and then four songs go completely unheard. So, I mean, you know, with putting out singles, every song gets its moment in the sun, you know, and there's, you know, when Stage Lights is out, there aren't five songs behind it nobody's listening to because Stage Lights is out. Like, it's just, you get Stage Lights from Adam Hood and that's what you got, you know. Now you get Bills in Alabama from Adam Hood and that's what you got. Yeah. You know, so I kind of like it like that, and it's affordable and it's efficient, you know. I mean, I can, like, you know, it doesn't take 6 months to record one song. It doesn't take 6 months to record four songs. You know, it takes 6 months to record 12, 15.
Yeah. You know? That's. So here's one of the things. I absolutely love the streaming services because I get to have access to literally everything except yeah. for when you randomly search something and you're like, oh, the Beatles aren't on that. And you're like, wow, that's a big miss. Like, you know, like it catches you off guard, but you're like, all right, yeah. I'll just move on because I literally have millions of hours. So it's not that big of a deal. But The one negative with that is, and maybe this is just me, I don't find myself spending the time with an album like I used to, because there's always something next, and it's in my face too. Like when I was driving to high school, it was one CD in there, and maybe I'd get one in 2 weeks. And but for those 2 weeks, that's all, and I memorize it. I had it, and those are still some of the greatest music memories I have, because of that. Is it better to make a bigger impact with one song, like a TikTok famous song, right? Like something that you're like, okay, it's everywhere, everyone's singing it, but no one knows who it is, and this is just a moment of sun. Or is it better to have someone that's going to sit here even now today, listen to your album and really appreciate it, and kind of be on that deeper dedication to it, even if they don't like it, right? Like they may, you could still have someone who's like, I don't like this stuff,
right?
Which would you prefer on those things?
Man, that's a good question too. You know, okay, case in point, Exile on Main Street was my favorite Rolling Stones album. Sticky Fingers has my favorite Rolling Stones songs on it. You know what I mean?
Yes,
so
sir.
It just depends, man. It just depends on kind of where your head's at, you know, and I'm going to welcome either one.
Right. Of course.
I mean, the only thing that sort of is a negative, if there is one, it's the fact that that this kind of controls the market. You know what I mean? Like there is no other alternative right now. And there's plenty of alternatives. There's plenty of other ways to do it, but like, you're just not going to get heard. And I wish that it was a little bit more of a diplomatic, I just wish that we had a little bit more of an open market than is going on right now. You know what I mean? But I think those things kind of create themselves when the need comes. And you know, I'm with you. I mean, the convenience of the streaming services is just, it's undeniable. I mean, I benefit from it the same way everybody else does. And so because of it, you know, and again, like I said, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's easier to make one song than it is to make 20, you know? So, I mean, we're just, you know, we're riding it just because of the fact that this kind of works for us right now. But, you know, it all depends. It depends on where my headspace is as a creator. And it depends on, you know, where your headspace is as a listener.
Yeah. Do you have a goal, something that you're still working towards now? And again, I hope I don't come off as rude,
but no.
Just, you know, someone who's like, okay, I've done this for, you know, I have albums where I'm going to say this as a compliment, but I know there are other artists out there that look at what you've accomplished and said, oh, I wish I was at that point, right? Like, I wish I was there.
Yeah.
Where I think in your day-to-day, you're a human, you're like, okay, this is what I'm working towards. Where's that next thing? Or is it, you just kind of going with the flow?
I'm just trying to narrow it down right now. I mean, you know, that's the thing. I you know, there are things that you want to be credited for. You know, I feel like that the idea of sort of a career path is, you know, if you don't want to do things the conventional way, you can watch Adam Hood and you can see how to do it unconventionally. if there's a, you know, if you want to know how to kind of narrow it down to a genre, you know, you can, like, I've kind of always wanted to be the guy that, like, if you want a song that sounds like XYZ, call Adam. Adam is the best at writing a song that sounds like XYZ. If you want a song that sounds like ABC, I probably wouldn't call Adam. So, right. You know what I mean? Like, it's those kind of things that, and I feel like that's kind of that that's sort of becoming muscle memory for me. I guess the next step is just to kind of, in a way that I've tried to define it as a career path, and then as a style, like, I want to get tight enough to define it by a song now. You know what I mean? Like, I've got so many friends that they have this great body of work, but then there's this one song, you know, and there's this one tune that, like, everybody sings along to. And that is equal parts higher power and equal parts determination. You know what I mean? So I understand that there's a massive amount of that's completely out of my hands. However, there's an art to it. You know, there's an art to simplifying a song to where it can mean so much to so many. You know what I mean? And that's kind of why it becomes a God thing. You know, that's kind of why it becomes, because you just can't plan those kind of things. I mean, you think about it, like, there are people that have done so much research on this to understand like exactly what melodies and what vowel sounds and things like that, like the stuff that like your brain, like your neuro pathways are designed to absorb a song this way. And you still can't top it. You know what I mean? Like you still can't get past just the mystery of creating a song. And so I mean, it's a weird goal, you know, but at the same time, the only way to accomplish that goal is just like, it kind of goes back to what I was saying, you know, the only way that I know to sort of reach that and make that goal attainable is to try to find ways to keep my integrity to keep my integrity and to stay open-minded and just be absorbent and considerate of other people. You know what I mean? Because you can't write a song. You can't write a song that everybody's going to love if you don't like everybody. You know what I mean? If I hate people, I'm not really going to be able to connect with them. You know what I mean? So,
that's deep. There you go.
Yeah, I know. Right. I know. And see, and that's the thing. And so, you know, that the whole, the journey into finding that song is really kind of a man. It's been an interesting sort of, a spiritual walk, if for lack of a better word, you know. It's been really interesting, and so that's kind of just my goal, you know. I mean, I like I said, I just want to be able to sort of instead of it being these broad strokes of career path, I want it to, you know, let it define me by a song or two songs or something like that, you know.
Yeah, it's the second time you brought up the integrity of how you're approaching your life, your career. And tell me to buzz off if this is too forward, but is there moments with like, what's a example when you had to hold to your integrity? Because I guess I'm kind of struggling with seeing where that is as a songwriter and as a musician, short of like, hey, let's not break multiple laws today. But like, I don't think that's what you're referring to. I think there's other things that are presented in a good way and still don't align with you. Do you have some of those examples where you had to make like that personal choice for your integrity?
Well, it's tough to be it's tough to be 49 in an industry that, you know, kind of, I mean, like there's popular people in their teens, you know what I mean? Like,
yes,
like
sir.
The people that are topping the charts are under 25, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so that in itself, just the day-to-day of it. And then, you know, we kind of get back to the social media aspect of it. I mean, it is definitely a game of comparisons. And so I feel like that's probably an exercise in integrity every day, just to sort of understand that that social media is a tool for me to express myself and a tool for me to let people who care look through the window for a minute, and a tool for me to share my music and my, you know, my thoughts with people. So instead of it being, I wonder what Taylor Swift's doing today and how close can I get to it? You know what I mean? Like that's kind of the idea, you know, and it just, it stems from that. It stems from understanding that, like, I can't do it the way that everybody's doing it right now. So where do I fit into this? And where do I fit into this without, well, where do I fit into this and still be happy at the end of the day? Where do I fit into this and still be able to sort of feel good about myself? And, you know, I mean, I think you'd have to do that with every job. You know, I mean, there were times when I had day jobs and I had to be a boss for somebody that was older than me, and they did not like it. You know what I mean? So I can completely, you know, I understand both sides of things. And so I just want to be able to, it's just the daily attitude, you know, which is really what the integrity is, you know.
I get that. And thank you for helping me define that.
Sure.
I also feel like your XYZ equals Adam Hood formula. I feel like, as someone who's listened to all of your albums, the one thing that I've learned as you've continued to write songs and put out albums is I know what is going to be coming, even though I have no clue what's coming, right? Like that's there, where some artists I turn on, I'm like, what's going, this is interesting. Okay. This is, and I don't mean to like put it on labels or anything, but you're like, someone did some extra research on this one and thought it would work. And you're like, I'm not sure it does.
Yeah, I know. And man, you know, you hate it for them because, right? I mean, because you can see the intention, but you can also see like, oh man, that was, you tripped. You totally fell on your face on that one. And so, I can't say that I've never fallen on my face, but I've also just, it's interesting to sort of try to find ways to keep it fresh, but still do what you do, you know?
And, yeah.
Yeah, it's that again. That's kind of the again. This is the fun part. That's the fun part to me. But it also is. It's the whole idea of. I mean, it's the balance. It's a balance of like, I'm going to absorb this much music, but then I kind of got to turn. I got to put this down for a little while, and then well, I mean, I really sure would like to listen to this last episode of this podcast, but I probably ought to go back and listen to some of these work tapes and see if I can't hone in on some of these. You know what I mean? Like the balance is there, man. It's every day.
Adam, I know we're getting close on time here, but I want to end with kind of a fun little question. With is there someone that you still turn to listen to? Someone that maybe just your casual country fan or just music fan might not be aware of that we can kind of spread that out. And then is there someone you'd like to work with that you haven't? Whether it's writing, whether it's performing, doing a song, someone that you're like that would be cool to write a song with them.
Man, that's a good question. I feel like I always kind of go back to the same guys. Like I always go back to John Hiatt. I always go back to Delbert McClinton. But I tell you this, so I'm playing this festival in January called Mile Zero Fest, and we do it every year. And this year Steve Earle's going to be there.
Oh, nice.
And so I started looking. I was headed home a couple of weeks ago and I was by myself and I was like, I wonder what Steve Earle's put out. Because man, you know, I was in my prime when Guitar Town came out. And so like, because Steve Earle
that
was
explains a lot, Adam.
No. Exactly. You see what I'm saying? And so like he was doing what I wanted to do when he was doing it. And, you know, and so I really gravitated to him, and I'd forgotten how much I gravitated to him until it looks like the most current thing he's put out. It's like a live acoustic album, and it's right. Devil's Right Hand. It's, I mean, it's all the classics. And I turned it on. I said, this ought to be interesting. And I started listening to it, and it was just a walk down memory lane, man. And I thought, this is where I'd forgotten how much I just loved Steve Earle. And so that was fun and kind of sparked that. I kind of have made Bob Seger a go-to, strangely enough, just because, yeah. In the whole social media structure, it's like, well, do some covers. Well, okay, well, what covers do I do well? Bob Seger. And so we did one time and I was like, wow, that was fun. And, yeah. we've put a Seger song or two, I play Still the Same in my acoustic sets. Well, as a band, we play Main Street. You know what I mean? Like so Seeger's like that too. And so those are kind of the people that I think I would still like, I'd like to write with Seeger. And I know that's doable. I'd like to write with Steve also. And I know that's doable as well. I've got some buddies that are in close relationship with Steve, and I just kind of haven't had the opportunity and kind of haven't pushed either because you kind of want to let those things happen. You want to make yourself available. But, you know, at the same time, I'm also one of those guys that, like, I was on this thing called the Country Throwdown Tour in 2011. Well, Willie Nelson was the headliner. And I am so passive a human being. I was the only person that didn't meet Willie Nelson on that tour. I mean, the only
really?
Person. Yeah, everybody else went on the bus and hung out and had biscuits and gravy with Willie. And I was like, nah, I'm just too.
Because, you know, when you think of Willie, it's biscuits and gravy. That's
yeah, exactly.
That's
I know. Exactly. That's my code word.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
So, but yeah, that's what everybody did, you know, except for me. And I just, you know, and I, that's that, I'd say if there was a regret I had, that would be my regret. You know, just because and that was just sort of all shucks and myself into, you know, into missing out on an opportunity. But there's a fine line between it. You know, I mean, you want to sort of be available, but kind of have a little bit of grace with it, too. You know what I mean? Like not be so desperate.
Right. Oh, Adam, this was a blast. This was a true joy. I want to turn it over to you. What's the thing you would like people to listen to of your work? Where's the best way to find it? How do we get involved with Adam Hood and the work you do?
I mean, I would say, number one, everything is on my website. It's all adamhood.com. That'll get you to all my social media platforms. That'll get you that's links to all my streaming services. We're on iTunes and Spotify and Pandora and everything like that. So tour dates are there. My merchandise is there. Everything that you need to find that kind of is information about me that starts at adamhood.com. And then, here's what I would say. So I made a record after Bad Days Better. It was called Adam Hood's Different Groove. And basically it was a repolishing of the first album I ever did. And so I would start there, because that's kind of, it's a fresh, clean coat of paint on the songs that kind of established my career. I'd start at that one, and then I'd go to Bad Days Better. And then honestly, like, that's like, I mean, current one, second most current one, and then just start running down after that. I got singles. We just put out our third single, in just kind of a little series of singles. It's called Bills in Alabama. I love that song. I'm really mm-hmm. proud of it. I wrote it with Rob Snyder, and we'll be putting another one out at the end of this month, right before my go out on a weekend with Miranda Lambert. So we're going to put a single out right before that. So yeah, I'm trying to put new stuff out there and just kind of pepper things with, you know, just keeping things interesting, you know, and keeping you guessing. But yeah, I mean, I'd say start at the top and then you decide for yourself.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Adam, for your time. It was very insightful, and I truly wish you the best. I know one day it'll be, you know, amphitheater sold out for Adam. And if not, I hope you find that song that you're looking for.
Well, that means a lot, Russ. Thank you for saying that. And that's really encouraging. And I appreciate it, man. These are some really interesting questions. I got a lot out of it myself. So thank you.
That makes my day. Thanks so much.
Yeah, man.
And thank you for listening to another episode of The Gateway, brought to you by Northern Illinois University, where your future is our focus. And please, remember to love always the promise of tomorrow today.